Move Australia forward. Move Australia forward. Move, 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 move.
Real action. Real, 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 real action.
Are you hung up on the election? Sick of the jargon? Vote One 3CR, your complete post-election guide.
And there you go, this is our third birthday. Celebratory sounds as, yes, 150 plus shows under our belts. A very big thank you to Miss Ellis Bleeby, who helped me through for most of this time on her legal studies breaks. And yeah, what a 3 years it has been. I mean, for Renegade Economist to come on the air back in 2007 on September the 1st, back then, I mean the 5th, I think, but just prior to the GFC blowing up. And we've been watching it ever since as we the people have battled to maintain a place of dignity on this planet as climate change comes in one direction and the wealth gap smashes us from the other, undermining our friendships, causing frictions in families and causing more and more of us to lose hair and just wonder, how on earth is there a way forward? Well, we don't have all the answers, but we reckon a fairly strong message needs to be delivered to our politicians, to the general people, and that is that the earth is always going to get more valuable, i.e. living in prime locations in the middle of the best cities on the planet will lead to supreme competition, especially when capital is so mobile. You can click around the planet and sneak up on unsuspecting communities and deliver sort of huge windfall profits we're hearing about this week, as Australia has announced yet more phenomenal economic figures. And mining profits were up, not 93%, mining profits were up 63%, whilst the rest of the business community struggled along on 2.3%. Ah, let's just turn up the music, okay? Do we forget what we've just been through? One of the most well-orchestrated business-managed attacks upon public opinion and the dearth of public education and what we talk about here on the Renegade Economist, that scarcity rents will continue to go up with the mining boom being driven by Chinese and Indian demand for our precious resources. And yeah, what a story it has been, with BHP recording again record profits in the last week. Of course, they released it at 5 p.m. last Wednesday, so I missed out on telling you those details. But yeah, mining company profits ballooned by almost two-thirds because of soaring commodities prices. And that's what the resources super profits tax was aimed at, was ensuring that we the people, as valued members of the Commonwealth, got a share in these rising prices. It's not like Marius Kloppers and Tom Albanese at BHP and Rio Tinto, respectively, have done anything to that iron ore, to that coal, to deserve a bumper profit season. This is just a state of markets in demand, markets on heat. And if these are natural resources that no company, no individual ever produced, they were gifts of nature, then come on, fellas, let's have a fair go here. Everyone should get a share of that profit. And as Jeff Smith said on the show a few weeks ago, if a citizen's dividend was given out to every single citizen in Australia, well, it would have been very hard for those companies to argue that they had more of a right to share in the spoils of the earth than the rest of us. Well, we don't just need that, we need a true cost economic system so that the real costs of extracting those minerals and the resultant crap that's left over is incorporated into the pricing system, so that puts a deterrent on the use of coal and rewards renewable energy. But yes, our national accounts figures were out this week, and yeah, wages were up 2.2% over the quarter, but profits across all industries leapt by 19%. So the workers are on one set of rules and the boys at the top are at the other. And today's guest, Ross Gittins, wrote in one of his articles that the financial, called Mining Up, Manufacturing Down, but it's been growth all over for 20 years. Ross Gittins writes, the financial services sector's share of total output, i.e. gross domestic product, has grown by a remarkable 3.8 percentage points to 10.8%, making it now our biggest industry. The mining sector's share of GDP has grown by 2.7 percentage points to 7.7%, probably the biggest it's been since the gold rush, and bigger than any other developed country can claim. So these are the issues that need to be on everybody's lips, discussing why on earth banks are getting wealthier and wealthier, why the mining companies are booming upwards. And so much of it is based on the worth of the earth. It is land itself that is our most precious resource, our most valuable resource. And that's what we want to capture. We want to capture that land value so we can remove taxes off wages and off our food, which just seems to be the plan of the moment, is to remove income taxes and just place it all on goods and services. That's a trick to ensure the working class people pay more and more, and the wealthy get off on less and less. And so the double dip recession is coming up. Poor old America, they've got no idea. It's Ben Bernanke's talking about printing more money. We'll discuss that with Ross Gittins, but yeah, they've had some horrible figures in their housing market, surprise, surprise, again related to land, where the sales of existing homes fell a staggering 27.2% just over the last quarter, I think it was. But the housing market's been pushed off a cliff. So Wall Street crashed and the rest of the global share markets have been suffering ever since. So that is again a reason why we've got to get rid of this speculative nature. And here in Australia, football is a religion. And well, the Geelong football coach Mark Thompson, he's turned a $400,000 property gamble into a potential $10 million windfall by buying up an empty parcel of land in Armstrong Creek between Geelong and Torquay 4 years ago, which he and three others bought for $3.8 million. And now they're going to drip feed it to the market over the next 20 years. And Mark's going to be able to sit back and easily claim $10 million. So that's the way economics is going. There's this game for those in the know, and those who are left fighting for wage rises, it's just an old game. So, yeah, let's settle back and have a listen to Ross Gittins from The Age. You can always read him in The Business Age every Saturday morning inside page 2, and often in The Age during the week as well. So here is the interview I did with Ross Gittins today. And we welcome to the Renegade Economist, the economics editor of the Sydney Morning Herald, Mr. Ross Gittins. Ross, how are you?
I'm well, thanks, Carl.
Many years ago, you wrote about Renegade Economists, and this inspired the name of our dear show that's turned 3 today. Can you tell us how you came across the term?
Well, I guess I came across some views of economists that weren't the normal ones, and I thought that they were good views, but I had to kind of acknowledge that a lot of economists would have disagreed with them. So they were renegade economists, but that doesn't mean that a person with those kind of views is wrong.
You've certainly inspired a few people. A colleague of mine in the UK, Fred Harrison, has set up renegadeeconomist.com, and our radio show going along well. And yeah, we certainly are renegades because we talk about sharing the economic rent, the worth of the earth, back with the people. And so I've been very interested in the Henry Review. As a columnist, one of your main jobs is communicating with the masses. How frustrating do you find it that the everyday person doesn't take more interest in economics?
Well, I think it's a pity because economics is really about the business part of our lives, the everyday part of our lives. Economics is the study of consumption and production. All of us are consumers, and almost all of us are producers. If you've got a job, you're a producer. If you work at home but don't actually go out to work, you're still a producer. You're producing a lot of things, even though they don't change hands in the marketplace. So just about all of us are producers and consumers. So the economy is not just something that's out there that's controlled by rich people. The economy is us. We're the economy.
Much of the barrier to entry for the everyday person is akin to what's known in the legal industry as legal ease. Have you come up with a term for some of the mishmash of heavy content, heavy text that you endure in reading economic theory?
Well, I guess like all specialist studies, they develop their own language, their technical terms. It's a kind of a shorthand between professionals who understand each other. They use a term, they know what that term means. It's sort of one word can take the place of a paragraph of explanation. But that's what excludes outsiders if they don't know the meanings of those words and they think of it just as professional jargon. But I have trained myself to try and avoid too much of that jargon so that people could understand me, because the basic ideas in economics aren't terribly profound.
What for you is the most important concept in economics?
The most important concept in economics is opportunity cost. The idea that, if you've got a dollar, you can spend it once. You could spend it on this or that or the other, but you can only buy one of them with $1. And so what that means is think carefully before that you spend that dollar, because you're cutting off a lot of options. And that's true of just about everything we do. We can do what we like, but we can't do everything we like. And so we've got to choose fairly carefully what we do with our lives, with our time. And time is an important part of economics, not just money, but money as well.
And so this opportunity cost really reflects our decision-making capabilities, and the use of the dollar value creates some form of reward and penalty for utilizing our time in the most efficient means.
It is very convenient to have been comparing things if you can reduce them all to the same currency and put them all in dollar values and say, well, this one's worth $10 and this one's worth $5, so what do you want to do? That's very convenient, but sometimes you really have to twist reality to fit that model of putting a price on everything. And there are a lot of things that it's very hard, if not impossible, to work out the value of things. For example, one of the things that's very important to us is security, job security for a start. How do you put a value on security? The problem with economics, or one of them, it's got many problems, but one of them is that it tends to ignore all those factors that can't easily be translated into a monetary value. So things like security, which are clearly very important to our well-being, to our utility, as economists call it, which is just a sort of fancy name for happiness or satisfaction. These things can be very important to our utility, how much pleasure we get out of life, but very hard to measure, and so economists tend to ignore them, and that's one of the big problems.
With the global financial crisis dragging on and on internationally, whilst Australia is in a unique situation, the profession of economics itself is come under increasing criticism and scrutiny. How do you see economics evolving in the future?
Well, one of the lessons that I learned from the global financial crisis, and you're right to say that this is a real challenge to economics, and I hope that economists will take it as a kind of wake-up call to have another harder look at economics. That's certainly one of the things that happened in the mid-70s with the first OPEC oil shock, and where people became terribly worried about stagflation, you know, the combination of inflation and unemployment at the same time. Up until then, economists believed you could have one but not the other. And we discovered you could have both, and that led to a crisis of confidence among economists. But I think the GFC should do the same. And one of the things I think it should encourage economists to do is put a lot more effort and energy into trying to find out empirical facts about how the economy works, how people react to certain circumstances, and less emphasis on just saying, well, we've got this fancy theory, and according to our theory, this is what will happen. Those theories don't work very well, and the fact that very few economists saw the global financial crisis coming is a demonstration that their theories led them astray. So what I'm saying is I hope that economics becomes more empirical, where we go back to basics, and instead of saying, I've got a fancy theory about how the world works, I won't worry too much about whether it works or not, because it fits together really nicely. It's really logical. It may not work very well. I think economists have got to stop saying that, and they've just got to start gathering evidence, empirical evidence, on-the-ground evidence that says we've done a study and when this happens, it leads to that. And that's just an empirical fact. It's not something that comes out of any theory.
And here we are talking to Ross Gittins from The Age. And the message is, economists, please wake up and reevaluate your ivory tower theories. Well, we've got our little theory. We're hoping to put it in practice. We've got some economic modelling underway. We've got a documentary happening and our 119th dinner on tomorrow night. Will you join us?
The ASX is worth $1.5 trillion and Australia's real estate market is worth about double that, $3.16 trillion and growing year on year. Around the globe, property bubbles have burst with the GFC and put both governments and the mortgagee under tremendous stresses. And it seems like that with this week's announcement by US Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke that they're just going to print more money, that the modus operandi of modern day economics is bubble economics.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. I would say that the problem that we've had with bubbles has exposed some of the weaknesses in conventional economics. It turns out they're actually quite good at controlling inflation, which used to be the problem that worried us a lot. And also, in the noughties, most countries, until the arrival of the GFC, most countries were making a fair bit of progress in getting unemployment down, but what was happening was that these bubbles were blowing up, particularly in real estate, but you can also get them in share prices. And that is one of the great challenges for economists. That's one of the reasons why the central banks have kind of gone back to the drawing boards to say, we know how to run economies without too much inflation, but we discover that while we're doing that, these bubbles blow up, and when they burst and people lose their houses and house prices crash and so on, it's really, really damaging. So how can we control bubbles? Now, the conventional economics doesn't have a very good fix on that at the moment, but I think all economists know that that's one of the great challenges. So you're right that we've had these financial bubbles, asset price bubbles they are really, and that they have exposed the weaknesses in conventional economics. And you're also right to imply that we haven't figured out how we can control that. But it's quite clear that having bubbles and burst, where house prices go through the roof and then they collapse, that's a real problem, and also collapses in share prices. I might say that I'm not convinced that we do have a housing price bubble in Australia. It's certainly true that we've had enormously strong growth in house prices, but it's also true that we haven't been building nearly enough houses and dwellings generally, and that's a big part of the reason why the price has been going up. If you've got family formation, more people wanting to leave home and set up their own household, but you're not building enough extra dwellings, then you'll force up the price of what dwellings you have. The beauty of that, if that's not a good situation for people who are trying to buy their own house, and it's not a good situation either for people who are trying to rent, and we ought to worry a lot more about renters than we do. But it doesn't suggest that house prices are going to collapse in Australia anytime soon. They may, but I'd be surprised.
It seems like with two wage earners now, the law of rent has seen that the price of housing has risen to accommodate that. Though owners of scarce resources understand that if the market can bear it, they can charge it. And so the price of land and housing has gone through the roof. But the point I'm interested in with this undersupply of housing issue is that there is a complete dearth of statistics on what's known as speculative vacancies. And here in Melbourne, using the REIV statistics, you could rent out a property for $17,000 or hold it empty and sell it in the 13th month so you avoid capital gains tax and make $120,000 in just 13 months. So,
well, you don't avoid capital gains tax. You avoid you avoid ordinary tax if you hold it for longer than a year.
You do, though, if you hold it in for 13 months and claim it as your primary residence by postcode hopping, some of these other tricks.
Well, that's really illegal. That's just cheating.
I know, but you go to these property seminars and that's sort of the wink-wink, nudge-nudge that's being given all the way along and giving more and more people an incentive to give up their day jobs as dentists and doctors and start moving into this this bubble mentality of just buying and selling.
Well, yeah, but that buying and selling doesn't get us very far unless it adds to the supply of houses and other dwellings such as units. I don't know whether it does. That is one of the problems. One of the problems with negative gearing, which is a lot more encouraged in Australia than it is in other countries, one of the problems is that it doesn't seem to do much to add to supply. And if it doesn't add to supply, it doesn't really help either renters or the people who are trying to buy their own home.
And this is the problem we've got, because you talk about central banks not having the ability to get a grip on asset bubbles, and really it's fiscal policy we need to look at to do that. And the Henry Review came up with some pushes towards switching taxes off corporations and putting a 1% land tax, for example, on the residential home, which certainly would start to claw back some of these rent-seeking profit motives that are driving first homeowners out of the market as investors keep ploughing in.
Well, I think that's true, and I think that would be a good thing. I have to say that it wouldn't be the big property developers who were loudest in their condemnation of an annual land tax that applied to every home. It would be a lot of ordinary Australians, I regret to say. But I think we'd be much better off if we removed a lot of these tax exemptions for the family home, because in fact what they do is they turn the family home into a good investment. It's a good investment because it's tax preferred, but by making it a good investment, they put the price up they increased the demand. You got demand for two motives. One is, I want this house as an investment. And the other motive is, I want to own this house because I want security of tenure over it, and I don't want to be kowtowing to a landlord. If we could get rid of the notion that housing was a fabulous investment by treating it like we treat all other investments, then the price of houses would be lower and it would be easier for people to afford to buy their own home. And if price of houses generally was lower, then rents would be lower too.
Ross, the mining profits this week, the Australian Bureau of Statistics found they were up 63%, whilst the rest of business struggled along on 27% returns on average. How did you view that in light of the big fat mining tax?
Well, it's just a reminder of what anybody with an ounce of skepticism would have realised, and that is the mining companies were crying poor and carrying on about how terrible that tax was and how they'd have to, you know, they wouldn't be able to build any new mines and maybe they'd have to move overseas and so on. They can't actually move mines overseas, which is an important part. They can't move our mines overseas, which is an important part of the argument, really. And they were quite clearly planning a lot more expansion in Australia because we've got these resources and they want to exploit them. And they pretended that all of that was on hold, but it wasn't really. You can now see from the investment figures that while all this argy-bargy was going on, these guys were getting on with their plans to increase their investment in mining in Australia. You didn't have to be terribly bright to figure that out, but that didn't stop those ads, that TV ads that the mining industry was running, being fairly influential, I think, with a lot of people who aren't as, you know, don't think these issues through as well as they could. And when you know, I take out an ad saying, oh, your job's threatened, terrible government is threatening your job, and this is going to affect everybody, not just the people who work in mines, but everybody in Australia. I mean, you really have to be pretty incredulous to believe that, but I think a lot of people did. And one of the reasons for that is that our politicians and governments have got themselves such a low reputation because there's so little trust for them. So you get very powerful vested interests who really only looking after themselves, spin a story about how the wicked government is trying to do you out of a job, and a surprising number of people are mad enough to believe them.
Yes, we've certainly got a challenge ahead of us, Mr. Ross Gittins. So thank you very much for joining us on the Renegade Economists.
My pleasure, Carl.
And there we have it, Ross Gittins, someone I read all the time. It's quite a little bit nervous interviewing him. It's great to have senior people like that who are trying to get the everyday person to switch on to this big game of economics, which a friend of mine, Anthony Eaton, who was on the show recently, describes economics as the law of least effort. The principle of economy of effort is to do less and achieve more. Well, that's probably what those who are investing in scarce resources are doing. And it's fast becoming the study of laziness, modern economics. And so tomorrow night we have our 119th dinner at the Conservatory, the Pump House Hotel in Nicholson Street, Fitzroy. Stephen Spadiger from ANU speaking, $15 per meal, free entry. Get in touch with us via 96702754 if you want to come. All right, thanks very much.
Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online.